And I've just been informed by my good friend Will, who is board op for tonight, that there are lightning storms all over Medford, Oregon area, and maybe bigger areas, I don't know. So I said, well, why would I want to mention that to anybody? They're not in Medford necessarily, and if they are in Medford, they're seeing them for themselves. And he said, because you just might go off the air very suddenly. The lightning strikes in the right place. So remember, friends, if I go off the air, they'll play music or they'll do something else. Don't worry about it. But we don't want to miss Dr. Sky, whose real name is Steve Cates. I said to Dr. Sky, what shall I call you? Steve? Dr. Sky? He's Sono. No, don't use my maiden name. Just call me Dr. Sky. So, Dr. Sky, welcome to Coast AM.
Good evening and good morning, Hilly, to you and all the listeners.
What are we doing with these darn, I realize you're not a weather forecaster or meteorologist, but
right.
how come we're having all these dumb lightning strikes in the Medford area, do you know?
Well, good question. I would imagine you're getting some of the Arizona monsoon pushed up northward, and as you probably know, and many of the listeners do, we suffer tremendously with the same problem here in Arizona through the months of June, July, and August. So let's hope we don't go off the air.
Monsoon? I thought that was something that happened in India.
Well, we have this weather little quirk that every so often we get Gulf moisture and also moisture from the Gulf of California, which moves northward, and we unfortunately get the bad weather, so to speak, like you're experiencing.
Forever. Sure, blame California. Everybody always does.
Oh, there you go.
All right, but you did say it was perhaps the Arizona monsoon moving
it's
up
possible.
To Oregon.
It's yeah. possible. And
anything's
kind of
possible.
Absolutely.
Is it, the way the weather patterns have been, this probably, where I live in Monterey, California, probably the coldest summer I can remember.
Oh.
It's, you know, while everybody else on the East Coast has been just sweltering, and most of the country for that matter, it is so darn cold here, which it generally is in August anyway, but that's just the quirk of the weather here. But it was that way in June. It was that way in July.
You have the great fog monster, as I understand, that creeps up from the ocean there.
That's true. That's what happens. And I expect the great monster in August, not in June and July. That's when we have our good weather. So we'll see what happens.
I love the area you're in. It's beautiful.
Come visit.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Dr. Sky, I'm going to be out of your way, by the way. What is it? A week from tomorrow I'm going there. Big UFO conference is in Mesquite, and that's right on the Arizona border.
Very close, sure.
Very close.
Love to join you.
Well, do come. I'll give you the details, and we can watch for UFOs together. Now,
absolutely.
Come on.
We'll have a fun time.
I will, but I do hope we're going to see UFOs. All right, let's get to business here.
Sure.
The strange thing that's going to happen on August 11th, which is Wednesday of this week.
That's correct.
Actually, is it more like Tuesday night? Because it is in Europe that they're going to see it at noon, for example, in London. So noon in London would be about, you count back from where I am, 8 hours. And that would make it about 4 in the morning, about the time we go off the air here?
That is correct. And it's actually going to be early for all the listeners who certainly would like to see this live. We'll be mentioning how they can participate. But this will happen for all of us here in the States, so to speak, during the early morning hours of Wednesday morning, the 11th. And it will be something quite spectacular. And I've been getting a lot of calls here, various people that, of course, I've been in contact with around the country, that are saying, well, you know, you should tell everyone that this eclipse in some measure is actually visible along the east coast of the United States. And I had listened to Linda Moulton Howe's report yesterday or so, in which she's a very lucky individual, wouldn't you say?
She's in France.
Oh, absolutely. What a lovely place to be, to see this darkness. And, Hilly, I've seen 3 of these total eclipses in my time and have traveled extensively to observe them. And we will be able to see this very partial for people in one city I'll pick out and highlight is, of course, New York City, when the sun rises at 6.02 a.m. on Wednesday morning, Eastern Daylight Time. The sun will actually be some 46% in this eclipse, making it rather dangerous to view. And I hope the media there is doing their job to tell everybody not to stare at the thing with the unaided eye, because that's a scare in itself. And I've seen a lot of people, and I've spoken with a lot of people, who have suffered some eye damage through these eclipses, the partial phases.
As I understand, the damage doesn't come from the eclipse itself. It's when it starts to move and you're still looking at it, yeah, and all the rays of the sun come and hit your iris.
Absolutely. And there's a little area, not being an ophthalmologist, but in the central part of your eye called the fovea, in which that tiny little area, 1/100th of an inch in diameter, where you look and see and have the capability to do your reading and such, that thermal burning of that area of the eye can cause the irreparable damage that we warn people about. And they may wonder, well, okay, Dr. Skye, what's the safe way to view it? And the simplest way is to acquire this aluminized Mylar film that all the nature-type stores and science museums are selling, and I know in Europe they're probably sold out by now. And also anything higher than a number 14 welder's glass is technically safe because you want to protect your eyes from the ultraviolet and infrared rays that can damage the eyes. But it's a spectacular sight, Hilly. The last time I saw this total solar eclipse was back in July of 91, standing on the Big Island of Hawaii, and through partly cloudy skies, the moon's shadow was there right before my eyes.
Well, I hope everybody has good weather for this. Now, let's get to your website, because it is run by the same guy who runs Art Bell's website, Keith Rowland.
Absolutely.
As a result, it's, you know, a one hell of a website.
Oh, thank you. You bet. And Keith's done a wonderful job, as we all know, and providing now, right now, for all the listeners in all the time zones, current information on how they can partake in this particular eclipse coming up. And a wonderful thing, Hilly, that I'm sure everybody who has a computer will be able to see, if you're not able to afford, like myself and many millions, to travel to the path of totality, you can link right up to the Dr. Skye website, the Art Bell website, and look at our live link, which we'll have, where you'll be able to see NASA's live link in going and looking at this eclipse right from your computer. And I did get a question the other day. Is it safe to view the partial phases on your computer? Believe it or not.
No, well, if you're wearing sunglasses.
I believe it's safe on the computer. And we're inviting all of the listeners in all the time zones, wherever we're heard right now, within the sound of our voices, to join us on the Dr. Skye website in unison. And you will get to experience, and I'm really serious about this, Hilly. This is, to me, one of the most sacred events that I can imagine in nature that I have ever seen, where in the middle of the day, the most eerie darkness occurs, where we see the shadow of the moon come literally racing from one other direction at about 1,500 miles an hour, and you get to see, for a fleeting few minutes, those in Europe get about 2 minutes and 23 seconds of totality. The longest totality that you can ever get is about 7 minutes and 31 seconds, and that's by the book. This one, of course, is not the longest, but the last, as we know, of the century, and probably more people per square inch or per square mile will get to see this event.
Now, you know, it doesn't seem to be as big a deal here as it is in other places. I'm reading now from your newsletter, okay?
Right.
It says, in England, thousands will descend on Cornwall, the area of first major landfall, as the path of totality creeps near the famous Stonehenge. In France, the famous Orient Express will roll north to take eclipse watchers to a special concert, the famous Reims Cathedral, with soprano Jessie Norman performing. A global Woodstock of sorts will be held in Azord, Hungary, around the eclipse week of August 11th. A special MiG-29 will be made to fly with a special camera on its wings to show this event to the gathering masses, just in case of cloud cover at the time of totality.
Right.
And for the lucky few who can, a special concert will be held during the eclipse near Cogan Park in Romania, Transylvania, as Luciano Pavarotti sings. Wow!
Isn't that amazing?
what amazes me is it's such a big deal so many other places. Of course, they're in the path of totality, and that does make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's a very narrow band on the Earth, as we know. And if you're a beginner to the science of astronomy, it's one of the most wonderful events, a very rare event. And doing some research on this for the program, I've come to the conclusion that the average town sees one of these type of total solar eclipses for repetition once every 410 years. Now, that's the average of averages. In certain cases, that may not be a lower number, and in some odd cases, an even higher number.
Not sure I'll be there for that one. What are we going to see on the West Coast?
Well, nothing at all.
Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, isn't that unfortunate?
Unless we look at your website.
Absolutely. And the last time we had a total solar eclipse here in the States was February 26, 1979, and the next great one that we're going to see here in the United States will be August the 21st of 2017, a big 38-year gap between totality. And those eclipses will go through some fairly large major cities of the United States. I believe the one in August, year 2017, actually goes through where you are, or the folks at the Air Radio Network in Oregon, heading east across the United States.
Wow. All right, Dr. Sky, we want to take a break here, and then we want to talk about all the planets, the planet alignments. That's something else we haven't touched. And the thousands of new comets we're going to see, and the meteor showers, and wow, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next half hour. So you stay right there, please, and we will continue on Coast to Coast AM. I am Billy Rose, sitting in for Art Bell. Oh, well, let's move along here, and my guest is Dr. Sky out of Arizona. And Dr. Sky,
yes.
There's so many more things we want to talk about here, so let's get to them quickly.
Sure.
One of the things is a planetary alignment, and again, you're not an astrologer, but
right.
You are a man who looks in the sky.
Absolutely.
Isn't that this week also?
Yes, actually, from the world of astrology, we find out a grand cross-conjunction consisting of the Sun, Venus, and Mercury in the sign of Leo, Mars and the Moon in Scorpio, with Pluto close by in the constellation Sagittarius, Saturn and Jupiter in Taurus, Neptune and Uranus in Aquarius. And from the world of astrology, obviously this would have great significance, coming on the heels of this particular eclipse that we're going to see, a wonderful series of events to really spark interest in keeping, as I always say to my television audience and all the friends around listening on radio, always keep your eyes to the skies, because there's so much to see and so much to learn. But there's a lot of other strange things that are going on. And I know we were speaking earlier, before we came on the air, about some of the possibilities of comets that can slip through, maybe during the eclipse. As many comets have been observed during the moment of totality that astronomers in the past were totally unaware of, building up to the big event of millions and millions of comets coming out from a large cloud that surrounds our solar system called the Oort cloud, in which there are literally billions of these frozen embryos, as I like to call them, of cosmic debris, that every so often, due to the gravity of the stars, they get pulled toward the sun.
Oh, wait a minute. You're telling me that there are comets there that nobody has seen before that we may now see, and they could be comets that possibly could be dangerous to us?
It's hypothetical. I mean, we're seeing that there are stars out there. Our closest stellar neighbor, other than, of course, our own sun, is naturally the star Proxima Centauri. And if we look at some of the other stars, like Sirius, the brightest star in the nighttime sky, as the Earth and the Sun and these stars move closer together, the potential exists, as astronomers are saying, some particular astronomers here at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, that over the course of millions of years, this phenomenon would be in full force. But the point is, where do the comets come from anyway? They come from this cloud, and yes, that's correct, Billy. There are literally maybe millions and billions of these frozen embryonic comets, which are actually the creation debris from the solar system that could come earthward and naturally, most definitely, come sunward. As we've seen in the past, we've watched over the last 2 years the propensity of seeing some magnificent comets. Back in 97, the great Yakutake or Hayakutake, however you pronounce it, or the great comet Hale-Bopp. And that's unprecedented. I've never seen a comet in my day that was so spectacular as the Hayakutake or Yakutake comet back on March the 27th of 1997 out in the Arizona desert, stretching 80 degrees across the sky. That's almost literally almost halfway across the sky. So maybe many things will be taking place.
Aren't we also going to have the, I don't know how to pronounce this, the Perseid meteor shower?
Perseid meteor shower.
Is that this week also?
Yes, and for all those who are listening right now, if you're in a dark area where you can go out and look into the northeast, between now as we speak and the big buildup will occur on the 12th, that is the early morning hours of August the 12th, lots of information going on in the sky this week, the eclipse, the meteor shower, the Grand Cross and the astrology connection for the alignment of planets, and of course, the passage of an object that you tried to allude to before is the Cassini spacecraft on August the 18th, and it passes within about 700 miles above the Earth.
Oh, that's a week from now, then.
Yeah, that's August the 18th, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will pass by.
Mm-hmm.
But with the Perseids, here's some other interesting things. Everyone in the United States gets to see this. All you do is look into the northeast on any clear night starting after local time, about 11 p.m., and if you look high into the northeast and follow a grouping of stars, easy to see, they're to the right of a W-shaped constellation called Cassiopeia. You'll see this mythological hero, the constellation or grouping of stars, called Perseus, and that's where these meteors are coming firing out like out of the barrel of a shotgun, a number maybe upwards of 80 or more per hour. And some of these Perseids, Hilly, are actually so bright they can leave vapor trails in the sky. And if you take a pair of binoculars and watch them, they look like a 3D electrified tube in the sky. But most of those burn up in the atmosphere, luckily.
Wow. Let me understand this now, because it's coming together in a way I'm not too happy about.
Uh-huh.
You're telling me that this week, on the 11th, we're going to have a total eclipse.
Right.
You're telling me that we're going to see some new meteors that we have not seen before. You're telling me that there are thousands of new comets out there. You're telling me, you haven't even mentioned the giant solar flares that we've been having.
There's more to come, yeah.
Which is, and wow, I mean, what is going on in the sky? It is beyond belief. And here we have the Aztecs into their calendar. They're predicting the end of the world. So is it possible that we won't get to Friday the 13th?
You never know, and I would hope we do. I mean, I'll be optimistic. Of course, that's my wish and my desire. But I would imagine a good answer to this phenomenon is, at one time, at this particular year, there seems, you're right, so many phenomenon in the sky going on by whatever grand creator there probably is out there, orchestrating something in the sky.
Well, apparently something is coming to an end, whatever it is, whether it's the world or something else. Everything works in cycles, and we've got everything coming at once. So is that unheard of? You're the astronomer here.
Well, it's not necessarily unheard of. I think there's a lot more education, of course, what we're trying to do right now, to educate people as to at least how to enjoy some of these phenomena. But if we think back to the passage of the great comet of Halley back in 1910, there were obviously not the amount of information, no internet, no mass communication. Then the tail of that particular comet literally passed over the Earth in May of 1910, and there were carnival barkers of sorts selling all kinds of anti-eclipse pills, and again, merchandising was in high fashion then. But this seems to go in spurts. But I would agree with you. It seems like right now we're kind of like moving toward a peak in all kinds of activity. And literally, in so many words, all hell breaking loose.
Wow. One thing that we haven't touched, and then I want to go to phone calls, if I may.
Sure.
And that is, in fact, let me give those phone numbers right now. West of the Rockies, it's 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-821-5033. First-time callers, 775-727-1222, and the wild card number, 775-727-1295. Okay, well, you told me when we talked the other day that at the back of the Earth,
right,
there are, what were you saying? I forgot whether it was comets or meteors, but you were saying there was something at the back end of the Earth that we can't see.
Asteroids that are flying through space.
Asteroids, okay.
A good friend of mine here in Arizona, the University of Arizona, Jim Scotty, who works in conjunction with a very important project here called Space Watch, which their mission, among others, is to track the inbound bolt out of the blue, so to speak, that comes from space, the small asteroid or asteroidal-like body. Like here in Arizona, we have a famous meteor crater that many visitors and, of course, locals know well, just to the east of Flagstaff, called the Great Barringer Meteor Crater. It was formed, the 2-mile or so in diameter crater, incredibly hilly, by an object only some 200 feet in diameter, according to the best guesstimates, about 50,000 years ago, traveling at an incredible 50 or 60,000 miles an hour. Now, what about these small objects that size that our nighttime cameras may not pick up, or in the broad daylight? And obviously, when we have this particular eclipse, I'm sure that since not everybody gets to see darkness in the middle of the day, it's a grand opportunity, as it used to be for the astronomers before the advent of spacecraft, to study the areas around the sun. Also, the potential for these objects hitting us in space is on the increase.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that question. What about all the various you know, telescopes we have in the sky that have been formed so well, do you think perhaps that they might in some way get knocked out? And between the solar flares and the eclipse and everything else that's going on, do you think they're in danger?
Well,
really, there's a brand new one that just went in the sky, what, last week, two weeks ago?
The answer is yes. And the Chandra Space Observatory that was recently launched, I have a very incredible factual story that back in, and I'm sure it's either 1993 or 94, the date isn't as important as the event, though, that the cosmonauts aboard the Mir space station during a previous passage of the Perseid meteor shower were actually struck in space, in orbit, obviously, by some debris from the Perseid meteor shower. Tiny as it might have been, it woke them up and did some minor damage, they say, to one of the solar panels or the hull of the spacecraft. Now, we're waiting for the big Leonid shower again this November, and the last year's prognosticators said that we might have our spacecraft hit and sandblasted with these billions upon billions of micrometeors. We don't know. So, yes, these spacecraft could be damaged, and the influx of Perseids, as far as I know, I've been watching the shower for 25 years. Usually it puts on a good show. That's 80 meteors from the ground. But what about the ones you can't see up in space? But the meteors from the Perseids usually come in filaments, large chains of particles that sweep through as the Earth passes through the orbit of this comet that all is the precursor of the Perseids, the great comet Swift-Tuttle. So meteors are all, shower members, that is, are all from the passage of the Earth through the tail of
wow.
the great comet.
All right, so we can see this eclipse through your website. Now, go to Art Bell website and just click on Dr. Sky, but do you have your own direct website number?
Sure, it's www.drsky, just dr, no dot in the doctor, drsky.com. And again, all listeners and viewers who want to go ahead and check out this website, I recommend it. We have regular updates as often as possible. I also provide some of the local television feeds that I do for people like 3TV here in Phoenix and some of the other local radio stations here and around the country in updates on what people can see in the sky. And growing up in the New York area, Hilly, I really had a lot of light pollution to contend with, but I give my parents great credit for spending the time. And I think what a wonderful way for parents to spend time with their children and take them out with their hand in hand and show them the wonders of the nighttime.
All right, let's go to Chris in Austin, Texas. Hi, Chris. This is Hilly Rose.
A lot's going to happen here in the next few weeks.
You got to talk right into your phone, please.
Sorry about that. Is it
there
better?
You go. Yeah, much better. Go ahead.
Let me put this in simple terms.
Put it into your phone because you're fading again. Okay, that's fine. Talk
the
right into it.
Activity of the solar system has picked up. It's at its highest this decade, and it's going to get worse by the end of the year.
If you're referring to solar activity, yes. Solar activity is on the increase, and what I mean simply by that is that the greater number of sunspots, these cooler areas on the sun, are visible, thus the potential for seeing solar flares, and this affecting the Earth in the form of electromagnetic, you know, effects, either changing what radio station signals are heard, either increasing that, or possibly damaging power grids around the world, as they did in Canada in 1989 when we had some other solar flares affecting it. But yes, solar activity is on the rise, and you can also go through the Dr. Sky website and check and look at the sun in its conditions, as also on the Art Bell website, to be alerted to these solar flares that occur from time to time. But we haven't seen anything yet. We're going to see, Chris, some real good activity coming up here, probably at the beginning of the year 2000 into the spring of that year.
Okay, Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's go back to Austin, Texas, and talk to David. Good morning to you.
Yes, hello, Eddie. It's Dave calling from Austin, listening to you on KJFK 98 FM.
Great.
I've been watching this cycle for a number of years and what is coming up. And you've been, and Art have been talking about the weather, the changes in the weather. I've been working on a theory of how this weather patterns are correlate with the solar flare activity. We've always been taught that the heat of the sun runs a planet.
That's true.
But in fact, it's not. It's the solar flare. The way it works is when a flare strikes the upper atmosphere, it ionizes and heats the atmosphere. sets up a thermocline. Thermocline stabilizes the air. As the air stabilizes, high-pressure cells in the upper atmosphere become stronger. They run like gears. They strengthen the lower atmosphere, high-pressure cells, and run the trade winds. When solar activity drops, the upper atmosphere cools rapidly. Large low-pressure cells form. We get the big polar vortexes set up, and the high pressures collapse, and then you have your El Niños, and it runs backwards and forwards, up and down. And you're seeing now, you're seeing increased electrical activity, because with the flares, or increased lightning activity, because when the flares strike the atmosphere, the Earth, it increases the current in the atmosphere. And so you begin to get this violent lightning. We're beginning down here to see braided lightning.
This what was that word, braided?
Braided, where you'll have 2-3 bolts wrapped around and braid around and even coil.
Wow, interesting.
As they come down. And if you watch these electrical storms you're seeing in, all around the nation, you'll begin to see bolts that wrap around each other or bolts that come down in coils. Now, we are predicted to come up on a flipping of the poles very shortly. That's one of the predictions. Solar flares are what would...
You mean the magnetic poles,
yes,
north
correct.
And south?
Solar flare will cause this. As you're probably aware, a flare comes out, it spins off the sun, and it rotates counterclockwise. What you have is you have a photon core, or a proton core, and an electrical coil wrapped around the photon or the proton core, where you have protons being ejected from the sun and the electromagnetic coil wrapping around it.
Okay, so David, what is the bottom line here?
The bottom line is if a flare comes off the equator and it's strong enough, the core of the Earth being iron, it will flip. It will be just like wrapping an iron bar in a coil. It'll cause the poles to flip and align themselves with the flow of the flare.
So my compass will show true south instead of true north?
Will line east-west instead of north-south.
Wow. Okay.
And if you do that, you also run the risk of getting an electrical discharge from the sun in the form of a bolt that is also
Being a climatologist, I wouldn't try to run with that comment, and I would certainly respect the caller's opinion, but I think we should alert everybody also from the astronomical side, I think the caller would agree, that great increase in auroral activity will take place, if it hasn't already, in the northern or southern climates, and those that live in the northern latitudes are usually experienced in seeing these beautiful curtain aurora. Also, a new link up on the Dr. Sky website is the space weather link, which shows you from space all of these solar activity affecting the Earth in the form of auroras. A wonderful site to check, and I'd certainly like to go after more information as to what the caller was speaking about and update myself. It's a fascinating thing. Maybe he could explain the great drought on the East Coast.
Yeah, it's possible. All right, let's go to Kevin in Connecticut. Good morning, Kevin.
Hi, Hilly. How you doing?
Terrific.
Good morning, Kevin.
First time I've ever gotten a chance to talk to you, and good morning to your guest. Parenthetically, your other caller mentioned weather, and, of course, I'm on the East Coast where the drought is. And would you believe tonight we're going to have temperatures in the 40s?
Oh,
yeah. Pretty weird.
It's an early winter.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask, I'm not hearing much about this. I thought I understood that after the total eclipse of the sun that night, your guest can fill me in, but I believe there's also going to be a total eclipse of the moon, and will that be visible from the U.S.?
No, that is not correct at all.
Not correct.
The other phenomenon that you described, I mean, the first phenomenon, of course, is the total solar eclipse. Right. We will not see in Europe a total lunar eclipse at all because the conditions are just the opposite. You need the sun and the moon where they are. When the moon is obviously invisible to us, covering up the sun. But we get to see in the United States in January, I believe it's the 20th and the 21st of the year 2000, just like a hop, skip, and a jump away, we get to see in its entirety a total lunar eclipse, which is the event in which the Earth blocks the light that the sun sends to the moon, and the moon appears like this surrealistic Chinese lantern in the sky. We will have that event coming up in January of 2000 for us.
And that's real good for those with telescopes and so forth, right?
It's actually better in a pair of binoculars to be viewed best.
Yeah.
These events like the meteor showers I'm speaking about today, are very much without any optical aid. But if you're looking at a lunar eclipse, it's totally safe. All the phases, you require no filters. The lunar eclipse is at night, and you really don't need a telescope. Binoculars are, in my opinion, one of the best friends you can have. And people say, why, Dr. Sky? Well, it's simple, because you use both of your eyes, and you don't necessarily have to cover the other eye and get the eye strain that you probably need to do.
Yeah, but do you see as far or as well?
No, you would see much better, Hilly, of course, with the telescope. But if you want a nice panoramic view that looks out of this world, I still recommend a pair of binoculars for the beginner and someone who, of course, may be at the level of the listeners in general who want to learn more about the sky. Binoculars are a wonderful way to get started in the science of astronomy, in my opinion.
And you catch a wide field. What is the date of that?
I believe and I don't have it specifically in front of me, but I'm pretty much 99% accurate in this, January 20th or 21st or both, for the night into the morning of the year 2000, we will experience one of the great total lunar eclipses in which the moon turns that blood red color, or so it should, all during the nighttime for most of us across the North American, and which is, of course, North America, which, of course, is, I'm sure, where most of this broadcast is going out to.
And that's where all the werewolves come out that night, right?
Absolutely, and I'll be out there myself.
All right, Kevin, thank you very much for the call. And Dr. Sky, thank you very much for chatting with you. We need to once again go over the basics here.
Sure.
And that is we've got a planet alignment.
Yes.
We've got a gigantic solar flares. We've got thousands of new comets that we're going to see, meteor showers,
asteroids. It's a wonderful week. Absolutely wonderful week. And I recommend, Hilly, in summation very briefly, is that they go to the Dr. Sky website, among other websites. And if you don't have a computer, obviously I'm privy to the fact that not everybody has a computer, you need to go to the Discovery Channel live starting Wednesday morning at 6 a.m. to see the entire eclipse live. And, of course, on the Dr. Sky website, continual updates throughout the year on how you can participate in basic visual astronomy and really learn and see things, even if you live in brightly lit cities like New York, Chicago, Houston, L.A., you can partake in astronomy. And as Dr. Sky says, always keep your eyes to the sky.
All right, Dr. Sky, thank you very much for sharing this hour with us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Hilly.
And we'll do it again sometime.
Thank you.
When the skies come together, quite as they're coming together now. I mean, I don't know about you. I'm waiting here in the next hour about the end of the Aztec calendar.